Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
But dude averages 18 yards after catch.
We get it. When you're passionate about something, you go all in. You live entirely in that world. That's exactly how Graybar is about renewable energy projects.
He's all fourth quarter, such a
sleeper. Join our league of clean energy at Graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Whether you want to
buy, buy, buy
in a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market, Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
With Danny, I'm Grant. This is The Fan. We are brought to you by the law firm Condori and Murad. They'll help you update your last will and testament. They'll set up a revocable trust for you and your family. Schedule a free consultation for their estate planning attorneys today at kmlawyers.com. Be sure to tell them that we sent you. That's kmlawyers.com. A chance to win Caps tickets on this show today is 1 hour away at 4 o'clock. We've got a pair of tickets for you to go to Caps, Penguins, and the good seats. You got to be listening right at 4, and it is a Wizards Wednesday, which means we're sending you to a Wizards game with tickets if you can win them at 5 o'clock. So Caps tickets at 4, Wizards tickets at 5. Great show lined up for you, taking you up to 6:30. Right here on The Fan.
Yes, indeed, my friend. Wizards came in second last night, as they should. They understand the assignment. They are doing what they're supposed to do. After a couple of wins, they're back to doing the thing that I want them to do, which is to have the worst record in the NBA.
Did you see any of the Cooper Flagg highlights last night?
Yeah, I happened to catch him.
Oh, man, did he have a night.
Yeah.
He might single-handedly be able to make them interesting. I don't even know what kind of prospect. I haven't watched enough of him.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what kind of NBA player he'd be. I know that he would be worth turning on the TV for. He would make them interesting again. I don't remember any of the four major teams in this town being this dead in terms of interest and energy and reason to talk about them. Like, in our 11 years on the air now together, none of these teams ever. The Nats, when they've been bad, I don't remember a single team, Danny, that was this irrelevant in the grand scheme of the D.C. sports landscape.
Which is a bummer. I mean, you know, we've had discussions sort of anecdotally and sort of big picture in the past about how much of a sleeping giant basketball town this is. It hasn't been the case in a long time. Used to be, when I was a kid, we're doing a lot of nostalgia today, but Maryland was a huge deal. Georgetown was an enormous deal. Then, kind of to a lesser degree, GW was a decent deal, a perennial top 25 program. And then you had other teams kind of as upstarts that made it interesting, whether it was Virginia or, you know, even Virginia Tech or Richmond had an amazing moment in the tournament. There was so much basketball here, and it mattered so much. Just feels like it's never mattered less, which is a bummer.
Speaking of Georgetown, how about the Hoyas? Georgetown last night was up 9 at the half. They ended up losing. Final minute and a half or so didn't go their way against a top 10 team in Marquette. But 3-0 in the Big East. Chance last night outplaying Marquette for a good part of the night to get to 4-0 in the conference. They'd won 4 of their last 59, I think it was, games over 3 years in the Big East. It's amazing what happens when you hire qualified people that deserve gigs, like Ed Cooley to be the head coach. They're a much better basketball team right now than anyone thought they would be. And about 2 weeks ago, I was talking to folks around town, and they're like, oh, well, they're not playing anybody. They're just playing a bunch of bad teams out of conference. No, they're now in conference, winning games. They're on the road against a top 10 team last night. They were the better team for about 24 minutes of that game, I would say. They end up losing close. The Hoyas, they're not back, but they're a lot better.
Yeah, I was going to say, dubious honor, but it's still good, right? Just behave normally. We're never getting 80s Georgetown back. I understand that. I just don't think that's a thing. But you can't be 0-1,000,000. You know what I mean? You can't beat like North Carolina A&T in overtime by like a quarter of a point and then lose all your Big East conference games. Just be reasonable and make it fun. Yeah.
The last 3 years, 0-2-2 games in the Big East.
And it didn't even feel like that many.
Right. That's true. But yeah, that was a fun watch last night for sure. What'd you do last evening? What were you watching?
So, watched The Wiz after I got home and, you know, kind of flipped around, checked some highlights. I have been watching The Gentlemen on the Netflix show.
So, that one keeps getting pushed into my, we think you'll like this tab. Will I like it?
Do you, are you a fan of the Guy Ritchie style of flicks? Well, it's Guy Ritchie.
Jason Statham?
It's him. Guy Ritchie's doing it. So, it's designed, it's not quite in the style of Snatch or Lock, Stock, Two Smoking Barrels, etc., but it's that feel where you've got Polish gangsters talking in a very British way. You know, it's like that sort of dude. It's like, let's introduce this guy. Show him being the most terrifying yet calm kind of supervillain, setting up all these puzzles that are a huge pain in the butt. And everyone's got to navigate. And it's only by the grace of you-know-who that you barely skate by on your tuchus. Very well done so far.
Yeah,
I'm into it.
I like it. I think I could get in on that. All right, let's go around the NFL with some burning questions as it pertains to everything going on in football. We'll bring Dad in guide us through some of the top questions today around the National Football League.
So yesterday, the Bears wanted to interview Mike McCarthy, but the Cowboys denied it. Are the Cowboys doing the right thing by telling the Bears they can't interview him?
I don't understand what they're doing. This feels to me like somebody going, I don't know if I want to go out with you anymore. And you go, okay, you've got to part ways. And then you find out that someone else wants to go out with the person you just told that you don't want to go out with. And you go, hey, no, you can't do that. I'm going out with him. Feels odd to me. It feels like this was going to be kind of a parting of ways as McCarthy's deal was done and everything was kind of expiring. It just felt like a natural breaking point. But now I don't know. Again, I'm not sure what the plan is, but I love it. More chaos, please, for Dallas.
The Cowboys are bad at this. And by this, I mean running a football team. Mm. They are so inept at this point, Jerry Jones and that entire outfit at the top. The Dak Prescott process was so stupid and so ridiculous. You end up paying the most possible and annoying people as much as possible. Not the way it should work. In this case now, by not extending McCarthy, by letting this thing play out the way that it did, and now by saying no to the Bears, you keep backing yourself into a corner. So I actually disagree with you. I don't think this is they don't want to date him and they don't want anyone else to date him. I think as of yesterday, we now know Mike McCarthy will be back as the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys. Because if he wasn't coming back, if they were going to interview other people, if they were going to extrapolate their search, then you would tell him, no problem, go interview with Chicago. But by not allowing him to, they've showed their hand. Now, he's got the leverage, by the way. If you're saying you can't go there, you're telling me you're going to keep me, my negotiation just got a little bit easier for my agent. So they're just bad at business at this point.
Yep.
But Mike McCarthy's going to come back. And I guess the answer to Darius's question for me is, are they doing the right thing? I actually think, oddly, they are. I'm not sure that they would do better than Mike McCarthy this offseason. Now, here's what I'm doing. I'm giving him a 2-year contract offer. I'm not offering him 5 like you normally would when you hire a head coach. Because I could fire him after 1 if I want to at the end of next year, pay him out on 1 year while I bring in a new coach. But I've already done my back channeling. I already know who's willing to interview. I know if Mike Vrabel's interested or if Bill Belichick will tell North Carolina to kick rocks or who might be willing to come in. Is the agent for Ben Johnson, Richmond Flowers, willing to have his guy interview with me? They've already done all that behind the scenes, legally, illegally, however they had to do it. So my guess by saying what they did yesterday is they're rolling with McCarthy. That tells me he's the best they can do right now. So, yeah, probably the right decision.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, to me, it's not. I think they need a young, fresh voice and kind of just to wipe the slate clean. But there's only so much wiping you can do within, given their cap position and the fact that Jerry Jones is still in charge.
Speaking of Jerry Jones, really quick before we go to question 2. Are you watching Landman at all?
I haven't yet, no. I heard it's awesome.
Do you know that Jerry Jones did a scene in that movie?
I didn't know that.
Okay. Or that show, rather. I watched the scene. I have not watched the show. Okay. I've heard it's great. Jerry Jones acted his ass off.
Did he really?
I'm not even joking. Do you guys know about this?
I've seen memes on Twitter saying that he acted really well, but yeah, I haven't seen it.
I was blown away. Legitimately better at acting than owning a football team, and it's not close. Like, I'm not doing a bit. You guys all think I'm over-talking about this. Like, Academy Award-worthy scene.
Does he play himself or a character?
Basically, yes.
Right, okay.
So,
but it's not Jerry Jones, owner of the Cowboys.
No, it actually is. But when I say basically, so Jerry Jones walks into the room and he knows these guys. He's talking about, when I bought the Cowboys. But when I say basically, I don't know if everything he's saying is actually gospel to his life.
Gotcha.
But he's talking as Jerry Jones. And he's just giving this pep talk. John Hamm's laying in a hospital bed.
Mm-hmm.
Billy Bob Thornton sitting in the hospital room. And he's just telling them about, like, work with your kids. You'll never regret it. Be around your kids as much as possible. So I don't know how much acting he actually did. But there's still, it's hard to explain this, but like when a camera's rolling and you're talking to John Hamm,
yeah,
there's a little bit of acting.
Right. It's like I'm now reciting lines. It's not easy to do. By the way, I can't believe I haven't watched that show yet. It's got everything I want. Billy Bob Thornton just walking around doing one-liners. John Hamm was incredible. Written by Taylor Sheridan, who just produces smashes. I should be watching it. I haven't yet.
There's only one box left to check.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any smokes and pancakes in that show?
I wouldn't know. Are there?
I'm asking.
I'm asking you.
I know that's important for you.
No, I just like good acting. TV I just people who are really good
that's
at acting.
Not, that's all I'm talking about.
That's all
about,
you're talking about.
That are good at acting.
Yeah.
Question number two.
Dolphins GM Chris Greer and head coach Mike McDaniel yesterday tried to say that they smoothed things over with Tyreek Hill. But if we aren't believing that, would you have any interest in Tyreek Hill joining the Commanders this offseason?
I will be in the minority on this. Everyone will be mad at me. 1,000%, absolutely not. Nothing's ever been more predictable. The only thing that annoys me about players like Tyreek Hill and Antonio Brown and these guys that are pain in the asses is that teams always want to line up to give them another opportunity to be their pain in the ass. And I get it. It's about talent. It's about points. It's about yards. It's about explosives. But did anybody see Mike McDaniel's press conference? He essentially said Tyreek Hill quit. Refused to go back in the game. When the linebacker from San Francisco did it, everyone was all over his butt. He's done. He should be cut. Kick him out of the league. Tyreek Hill does it, and the Dolphins are stupid, and he's the man, and bring him into my team. No, thank you.
Yes. I will pay the price. The price of whatever that is, I need it. That skill set, there's a handful of guys on the planet who've ever been able to do it. There's only one or two now who can do it. I'm willing to deal with it. I trust my culture. I trust my Dan Quinn. I trust my Adam Peters. I trust Michael Kingsbury, if he's still here. I trust Jaden Daniels. I realize I'm playing with fire, but maybe I've got some boundaries up to contain that fire.
Your culture is based on hiring and employing guys not like Tyreek Hill, that are team first, that are about the brotherhood. He's not.
He's not.
He left the Chiefs, not because he wanted to win more. You could have stayed in Kansas City and just won in perpetuity.
Yeah, and then his complaint was, I've never not been in the playoffs. I'm upset. It's like, well, you could have been in the playoffs forever if you just stayed in KC.
You wanted to be paid more,
mm-hmm.
So you left the Chiefs to go to a place that paid you more. Then you got pissy because you weren't being used as well as you were the year before or with the Chiefs, or you weren't winning. There are people that just can't be made happy. Selfish, me guy, great football player.
Mm-hmm.
He'll be someone else's player, not mine. I'm going to win with my guys. He ain't my guy.
There were two one-and-done head coaches in Gerard Mayo of the Patriots and Antonio Pierce of the Raiders. Who got more of a raw deal between the two?
I'm going to say Gerard Mayo did, and here's why. Both terrible situations. Both under-talented rosters, incompetent organizations who believe that they're way smarter than the average bear. Antonio Pierce has been around longer, has coached in multiple... This is why I'm defaulting to Mayo. Pierce has coached... And at the college level, coached at the pro level, has done a bunch of different things. Mayo has only been with the Patriots, only a linebackers coach. Now he was a head coach, and you now have a presser afterwards going, yeah, he probably wasn't ready for that. That's not fair to him. I think you kind of screwed and derailed his potential development, whereas Antonio Pierce, I think, will be able to easily go somewhere else, get another gig or something like that. Mayo basically seems Patriots are bust, and now it might be bust. So by default there, both bad situations, whatever, ugly, I go to Mayo.
So I'll use the same logic to say the answer's Pierce got more of a raw deal. Here's what I mean by that. Antonio Pierce was a more qualified coaching hire, in my opinion. He was the interim coach the year before. He did a good job as the interim coach.
Yes, he did.
I would not have hired him back. I would have gone and gotten somebody who was offensive-minded, could call plays, and could help me find and develop my next quarterback. But that's my own prerogative. Gerard Mayo, in my opinion, was not qualified to be an NFL head coach by my own standard of, like, Pierce has never been a coordinator, to my knowledge, who called plays. So I would have said the same thing about him in a sense, except that he was the interim coach for the several games at the end of the year, which now makes you plenty qualified.
Mm-hmm.
Mayo was a linebackers coach on a defensive staff with one of the great defensive minds in history who runs the whole side of the ball as head coach and whose son was the defensive coordinator. And then he leapt from coaching a position, never having called plays before, past the coordinator ranks to the head coaching job. So it's hard for me to say. I do think he gets screwed in the sense that in the vacuum of he coached 1 year with very little talent. It takes longer than that to build this thing up. Rookie quarterback. Yeah, that's not ideal. But he got a job he probably shouldn't have gotten. Like, it's hard for me to be that upset about him getting screwed when he didn't really ever deserve to be hired, the job, in my opinion, in the first place. Guys like Brian Flores are way more deserving than he is to get that head coaching job in New England, among a million other guys that I could name. If you want to just look at defensive coordinator types who were more deserving of that job, you know, you could look at like Patrick Graham, the longtime defensive coordinator around the league. So he got a gig he was only going to get in New England by having a relationship with that owner. It's hard for me to find tears for when it doesn't work out for the gig that you probably outkicked your coverage to even get. Whereas Pierce, a little more deserving anyway, and at least in the Patriots' case, you gave him Drake May. He had some talent, wasn't developing the players. The Raiders went into the season with Gardner Minshew and Aiden O'Connell.
Yes, they did.
I could have told you in a division with three 10-win teams, you'd win about five games.
Hey, this isn't going to go well, guys.
Seahawks head coach Mike McDonald hinted that Geno Smith is going to return as the starter in 2025. Is this a good decision or no?
It is not a good decision. Geno Smith, 2 years ago, was excellent. Last year was pretty good. This year was not very good. Comparable touchdowns to interceptions. If you look at his contract, he's on the books with a cap hit this coming year for $44.5 million. Now, obviously, there's dead money there. It's about $13.5 million. I'll also tell you that I don't believe he'll be their starter. I think Mike McDonald was in an interview, and he's probably not going to divulge the whole plan the day after the season when he does his first radio interview. I'd be shocked if Geno's their starter in week one this year. But you've got a younger guy you could kick the tires on if they want to. I don't know why they would, but if they want to, in Sam Howell. You could also draft someone. You could go a lot cheaper and get a veteran to come in there and play as well than Geno on a big cap number.
I think they're screwed. This is the worst position, in my opinion, a franchise can be in. You're not good, and you're not bad. They're going to pick, if my calculations are correct, 15th as a 10-7 team that just missed the playoffs. Not a good place to draft a rookie quarterback unless you get lucky, throw a dart on someone that everyone passed on, or you trade up, which is always a kind of a terrifying proposition, and you're not bad enough to bottom out to be a top five team. So this is kind of what they were doing for a while, and they're doing more of it. They're just okay. That, to me, is very Atlanta Hawks. It's very Atlanta Falcons. I don't know why I'm picking on Atlanta, but you're in a place that's not particularly good. I don't think they have another option unless you want to go, you know, as you said, double dip and you move on from him, have a huge cap hit and go get Sam Darnold or something else. You're in the Geno Smith bucket. You already have Geno Smith. You're already paying him. They're stuck.
Let me see. Danny Ruye says Atlanta sports is middling. Got it.
Hang on 1 second, because I don't know that you actually answered that question. Starting Geno next year in week one is a good idea or a bad idea?
Yeah.
You're saying they're in a bad spot.
I think they're stuck.
Kidding, but.
So I guess good idea.
So you'd pay Geno the $45 million instead of cutting him and having $13 million in dead cap?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, you're stuck. You're screwed. I think you're screwed either way.
Well, you're screwed with a lot more cap space one way, and you could get comparable quarterback production from Sam Howell or somebody else. But all right, that's fine.
Last one, which NFL broadcast – it's a two-part question, actually. Which NFL broadcast crew is your favorite for a big playoff game? And which network presentation do you prefer?
Who came up with this question? This is sexy.
I mean, this is a G&D plus Dare special right here.
This is broadcast nerdery. I actually want Dad to answer this question as well, because this is up your alley. Danny, you go first.
Give me the Charles Davis team. That's my favorite. I love Charles Davis so much, and he's my favorite, and I want him.
Ian Eagle and Charles Davis. And what network presentation do you want?
I'm because I grew up on Fox. My game's been on Fox, so I guess I'd go there. But I know they're on CBS, so that doesn't really work. But I'll do that. No, if I get my hypothetical.
That's the point.
Yeah, so I want no song before any games.
Okay.
There should be no song. No one should ever get together and sing about a football game that's coming. You know what's good enough is the football game.
Waiting
so just have the football
all day
game.
For Sunday night.
Yeah, I've been fine. I've been watching other football games. So I haven't been waiting. I've been doing living my life, watching football. I'm not waiting for anybody. Again, that song is embarrassing. We should all stop. So give me the Fox coverage, but with Ian Eagle and Charles Davis.
I like that. I'm going with an NBC telecast. With their look, their aesthetic, everything about their score bug and all that, I'll go
Jack
NBC.
Collinsworth.
Jack Collinsworth has to be there for sure. It's very, very difficult for me not to go NBC so that I have Mike Tirico. Collinsworth's fine. I don't love him. Joe Buck's excellent. I think I'm going to go Joe Davis and Greg Olson, the Fox B team right now. I'm going to put them on my Commanders Bucks game and air it on NBC. Although if I could get Mike Tirico and Greg Olson, let's make beautiful music.
You know, they're a duo in Madden, Mike Tirico and Greg Olson.
I did not know that.
Yeah. I would go with Tirico and Collinsworth for my commentary team, but I want the theater of the Monday Night Football broadcast.
Like that.
I love the presentation of Monday Night Football.
They also do those wacky, I don't know what you would call them, like packages where they show like, here's the MVP race this season, and it's like four go-karts, and you know Lamar Jackson.
Yeah,
like
I get steamed up. I love
it. He goes over top of a bridge, and he's like driving around.
It's the weirdest bit, but I'm into it.
Joe Burrow hits like a banana and spins out in week three, but then he gets back on track, and then Ja'Marr Chase like and T. Higgins tackle him, and he flips over. Whatever those things are that ESPN does, I think those
they're
are
so goofy, but they're good.
They're the best.
Yeah.
Well, that department is. I'm going to give AJ Ataye credit. I think he builds all those.
I can only assume.
Yes. Former Grant and Danny producer, now ESPN producer, AJ Ataye.
Who makes digital shorts about MVP races.
I've heard he makes all those videos.
He's won Emmys.
Next on G&D, the Post put out 10 stats that explain the Commanders' season best. I want to go through those with you right here on The Fan. College football playoffs start tomorrow night in the semifinal round. Notre Dame, Penn State. Tell me that doesn't have excellent defensive college football written all over it.
Yeah, a couple traditional programs that, you know, haven't been to the mountaintop in some time going at it with a chance to do that exact thing to get to the mountaintop. You know, Penn State's road was as easy as a six seeds could be, I would say. And here Notre Dame is, you know, trying to punch with the big boys again.
Nikki Javala of the Washington Post wrote a piece, Commander's Stunning Season Explained in 10 Stats. And she's got 10 numbers here we can go through and look at that define their season. The first is 33 years. Of course, it's been 33 years. You got to go back to 1991 to find the last time Washington won 12 games. Mark Rippon, Gary Clark, Pro Bowlers, 14-2 team, went on to win the Super Bowl. This year it was Jaden Daniels and Terry McLaurin, and now they enter the playoffs trying to do the same thing that was done way back in 91.
1991, man. Just my eyes full of hope, flat top haircut, hitting nukes in McLaren Little League. Just a different lifetime ago, dude. That's 33 years.
Plus 8 in the win column. We talked about this on the show on Monday, but the 8-win improvement for the Commanders from their 4-win season to a 12-win season, the first time that's happened in the NFL since 2019, that a team has gotten 8 games better year over year. The last team to do it was the 49ers, and they actually got 9 wins better from 4-12 to 13-3, going from 2018 to 2019. Just an unbelievable overhaul, starting with the ownership group having their first crack at an offseason, because if people forgot, you know, our see-you-later party to Dan Snyder when he actually sold was in the summer.
Yep.
Right out here at the bullpen. The ownership group really effectively took over right before training camp. Remember, their first order of business, this was a year ago, going into the Ron Rivera, Sam Howell final season as a regime.
Mm-hmm.
They put those stands up and got some seating at training camp for people kind of overnight after they bought the team. But this was the first time this past offseason, hiring Peters, hiring Quinn, getting ready for the draft, the free agency period. This was their first crack at running a team. How'd it go?
Yeah, pretty swimmingly, I would say. Usually what happens, and I've been talking about this for a while, and you and I have kicked this around, is the first year for a new regime, GM, coach, when everybody comes in brand new, it's a bunch of the old guard hanging around, a bunch of losers. There's not much you can do. You spend the whole year basically identifying, is there anybody here we want to keep as you go 5-12, maybe 6-11 with a couple of veterans to try to help usher things in? That's frankly what I anticipated. I thought this would be a 6 or 7 win team. That's what Vegas thought. That's what their over-under was in most books, 6.5, 7 wins, somewhere in there. Because that's what's typical. That's what's normal. You're just a little bit more competitive, a little bit more professional. You get a chance to maybe win a couple of games here and there. Not this. They won 12 bleeping games. Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
28.5 points is listed here next among the stats that tell the season for the Commanders. That's their average per game. They were top 5 in the NFL in scoring offense. But their 28.5 points per game were the most in NFL history by a team with a rookie as a starting quarterback. Think about that.
Yeah.
Nobody's ever done that. And scoring was up a little bit in the NFL this year, but still top 5 in scoring. It's been a long, long time around here. The last time they had a prolific offense was probably 2016.
That was a good offense. Yeah.
Kirk Cousins threw for 4,900 yards, mm-hmm. which is one of the 10 or so highest totals at that time. I think it was like 7th, 8th highest total in league history. But they had some awesome performances. Jamison Crowder, Jordan Reed. Their passing game was pretty dynamic. Running game was okay. But it had been since then, really, about 9 years mm-hmm. since they had an offense that was must-see. And this one, in so many ways, surpassed that one.
It basically did because of Jaden Daniels, for goodness sakes, right? I mean, even in times where the offense wasn't humming, where it wasn't clicking, you still, hey, he's going to run around and do something that you've only seen a couple of times in NFL history. You know what I mean? Like the Griffin highlight run against Minnesota or some of those fourth down plays. He's doing that, plus you've got other stuff too. You know what I mean? It's just, again, I'm running out of hyperbolic words to describe how remarkable this whole thing is.
Yeah, there's a couple of Daniels stats coming up here in these 10 that summarize the season. 16 consecutive scoring drives. I think people forget that happened.
That's when the offense was just humming.
That was the no punts offense.
Yeah.
Shirt still available at the 106.7 The Fan merch shop. But from the fourth quarter of Washington's season opening loss at Tampa Bay in week 1 to the second quarter of week 4 against Arizona. So that's the entire Giants game week 2, the entire Bengals game week 3, the opening quarter of, and by the way, the majority of, only a couple of punts in that game, the week 4 game against Arizona. They did not punt. 16 straight drives. The streak kept Tressway sitting on the bench. We had him on the show and joked that he's now just a holder. We asked him what he's doing during the games because we hadn't seen him in so long. We just wanted to make sure he was still on the team.
Can you still punt, dude? We don't know.
Feels like a long time ago now, early in the season. You mentioned Daniels, 69% of his passes complete. That is a rookie record, highest ever by a first-year player. Third highest among Washington quarterbacks in a single season behind Sammy Baugh in 1945. And in the modern era, 2015, Kirk Cousins completed 69.8% of his passes. And the other record that Jaden Daniels set, and I don't mean organizationally, but for all rookie quarterbacks ever, 891 rushing yards.
Mm-hmm.
Daniels surpassing Robert Griffin's record internally here in the organization, but second among quarterbacks this season behind only Lamar Jackson with 915 as he rushed for more yards in a rookie year than any QB ever has.
Plus with a game and, you know, 90% of another game missed, just wasn't quite right for a while as well, with some low rushing totals where he clearly didn't have the burst or explosiveness. That much more remarkable, man. It became necessary, not just a convenience, not just a fun thing to have, but we'll go to the next stat here in a moment, but they couldn't run the ball any other way. He became their best rusher.
Yeah. I mean, he was their leading rusher for the year and in the majority of the games down the stretch. I mentioned this Monday. We talked about it for a short time, but in their game against the Cowboys to end the season, their leading rusher was a quarterback. Their second leading rusher was also a quarterback. Mariota and Daniels, who played half of the game each, were their leading rushers. I mean, it's just, it's not sustainable.
Right.
In fact, Toby was just telling me, he's been crunching a bunch of numbers, and we could bring on Toby, he can give the number, but it's like 50-some yards per game over 9 weeks, it sounds like, which I keep talking about the last 4 games. I'm harping on that. 3.1 yards per carry by running backs, 2.8 for Brian Robinson. But it goes back way further if you exclude the Tennessee game. What were you saying, Toby? Yeah, so they've ran for 82 yards per game since the three-game losing streak, non-quarterback rush yards. If you take out that really good Titans game, they've only averaged 60 rush yards, non-quarterbacks.
And did you mention something about the last 9 games?
Yeah, that's the last 8 games.
Really. So that's the post-losing streak. So 55 to 60 yards in a game normally is reserved for the teams that can't really run the ball. And that's like a, hey, we ran it 14, 15 times just to kind of make sure we did it. That was never the goal here. That was not the plan. That was not the MO. This is a run-first team. Now, with Jaden running wild, it's okay. If he goes out and gets you 60, 70, 80 yards in a game, well, now you add that to your 60 and you're at 140 and you're probably a top 10 rushing offense in the league still. But you can't need that every single week.
Right.
You want him to stay in the pocket and, I don't know, throw the ball and make some plays in the passing game.
It's got to be a feature, not what's required.
Yeah, you want to minor in the quarterback runs, not major in them like they have so much of late. Here's a really good stat from this piece in the Post. 10 statistics that summarize the Commanders' season. 6 touchdowns in the final minute and overtime. And if you look at the numbers, Jaden Daniels was one of the highest-rated, most prolific quarterbacks in the league at the end of games. But I got to say, we got our first crack at seeing somebody else, and Marcus Mariota did the same damn thing. And not to take away from Jaden Daniels, but it's not like it was just a JD thing, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, Mariota was exceptional in the Cowboys stretch run and throws the game-winning touchdown in the waning seconds. But if you go through it, the 52-yard Hail Mary touchdown to Noah Brown in Week 8, the 5-yard touchdown to Zach Ertz with 31 seconds left in the loss to Philly in Week 11, the 86-yard touchdown pass to Terry McLaurin with 33 seconds to go in the loss to Dallas in Week 12, Daniels against Philadelphia, the dart to Jamison Crowder in the Week 16 victory. How about overtime against the Falcons where he puts the team on his back and just goes full high school quarterback mode in Week 17? And then you've got Ertz in the end zone to clinch the playoff berth to win that game. And this past week, the 6th one of the season for this team, Mariota to McLaurin, 5-yard touchdown, 6 seconds to play. I think when the play was over, there was 2 seconds left to punch their ticket as the 6th seed.
They've been in these games. They've had the ball. And when you've got that playmaking ability at quarterback, that can happen. I mean, defenses are basically so terrified of, frankly, everything in those hurry-up offenses. And they've got so much practice in it, too, right? I mean, so much of their offense is tempo kind of throughout the season. So they're very comfortable in those situations, as obvious by the production.
This one's great. 87% conversion rate on fourth down this year. 20 of 23 on fourth down. And again, I give Daniels the majority of the credit. It's a small sample to try to say anything else. Mariota on fourth and one with no Daniels kept the football and went for 33 against Dallas, their final fourth down conversion of the season. But they converted at least one fourth down in 13 games, which they have done in only one other season ever in the 2000s. They were so good on fourth down.
So good at it.
They got a cheat code. Just like the Ravens have had for years. How many Ravens games have you watched over the last decade? And you see Lamar telling Harbaugh,
like, John's like, you want to go for it? He does.
Keep those guys off the sideline. We're doing this. They got their own now. Uh-huh. They got their cheat code. 13 touchdowns. That's McLaurin setting the franchise record for touchdown catches by a receiver. Well earned by a guy who has just been Mr. Washington football since the day he showed
up. Had to grind through garbage throwing him the football for so many years. Now he's having some fun.
Team names, bad quarterbacks.
Yep. All of it.
He's gone through the ringer. And then this one, not talked about much, but kudos to Bobby Wagner. 100 tackles in a 13th consecutive season. Joins London Fletcher as the only players who have ever done that. Fletcher actually did it 14 straight years.
What a really helpful player he was. He's not the same guy that was a superstar a handful of years ago. That's obvious. That's why he's available to you on a short-term deal, but has solidified that position. Stable. Is pretty effective as a blitzer, sure tackler. Maybe can't run quite as well as before, but still a really, really useful player. Majorly upgraded that spot.
Just such a great leader. Probably my favorite guy in that locker room after games to see what he's got to say, watch him hold court and how he handles himself. Just an absolute man. You know, just
grown up, yeah.
Love the guy. Let's get you a double play next. What's going on in our lives? Nothing to do with sports. We got the Blitz at the top of the hour. We're giving away Caps tickets. That's in 15 minutes. We got Wizards tickets to shell out right at 5 o'clock today on G&D.
Time for your double play on Grant and Danny. What's going on in our lives? Nothing to do with sports. Comes your way every day at this time. Driven to you by your local Washington area Honda dealers. Stop in for a great deal on the rugged and capable Honda Pilot. Contact your local Washington area Honda dealers today.
So this show, half of it anyway, is driven by coffee. Grant doesn't do hot liquid at all, let alone coffee. He's not a coffee guy. I am. I need it so much. It's the point of getting out of bed is the chance to get another cup of coffee. And it's always there for you. It loves you back. And I need it. So we do a thing every afternoon. Or not we. I do a thing every afternoon. It's not my fault. It's just how I'm built, how I'm made. I crash right when the show starts, basically. I'm exhausted. I could go to sleep every single day in between 2:30 after my dentist appointment and 3:30. Right then is when I'm ready to just take a nap.
But you're not going to do bedtime. You're going to do nap time.
That's nap time. Yeah. I could nap every day of my life. When I was a kid, when I'm a teenager.
Are you a napper?
Yes.
On weekends, do you nap?
When, if I ever have a chance to, I do.
See, I don't know how people nap. I think my dad screwed me here.
Okay.
If we're going full therapist, like.
Sit on the couch.
Sit on the couch. Yeah. My dad had this thing about us sleeping for some reason. And the idea of a nap to me comes off as lazy and basically disrespectful almost. And I will always feel that
way. Now, this is your dad or my wife that said that?
That's a good bit.
Thank you.
So I don't know how to describe it, but my whole childhood, what I remember is if my dad had just pulled up from work, coming home, and I was like laying on the couch, I would hop up and like dust everything off.
Were you sleeping? No.
Like grab a broom or whatever I had to pretend to do something.
Right.
The idea that I could have been laying down was just like scary. Like he was going to come home and tell you you were being lazy and what are you thinking and why are you doing that? Mm-hmm. Get a job or whatever it was.
And then you did like as a 12-year-old,
right.
You got jobs.
But I think it's because of that to this day. If I'm under the weather and sick, I feel awful. I'll go to my wife, and she's like, yeah, go upstairs and lay down. And I'm like, but I'm just so sorry, and I apologize. And she's like, just please leave me alone and just go do that.
You're more of a burden now.
But you're a nap guy.
Oh, yeah. It's very easy. What you do is you lay down comfortably and close your eyes and enjoy the bliss.
I know, but I look down on nap guys so much.
Enjoy it, fine.
I view nap guys as like,
I know. What the beauty of my naps is I don't need anything from you. I just go to sleep and I feel great. It's so wonderful.
How does your wife not get pissed?
She gets pissed. Yeah. She hates it.
Because you're not seven.
Hates it. Hates the idea of anybody doing anything.
You shouldn't be doing it.
Yeah. Can't stand it. So I don't get to do it all the time. But it's like when I put the deposits in the bank, like I coached my youngest son's game, then took my oldest to his game, took him out for lunch right afterwards, you know, probably exercise, like did a bunch of different things. And it's like, you know, I got a window here of 45 minutes or so. Those eyes close on that comfortable couch, pillow just so, leave me alone. Lights out. The best.
You just said something interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a nap on the couch guy, really.
Oh, that's where you do it.
I can fall asleep and nap on the couch while watching a game or something I don't care about. I'm watching college basketball, some random game, or like golf or NASCAR or something.
Sure.
That's on
the boring ones, yeah.
If I'm napping, and maybe this is part of the problem, I'm walking up the steps, I'm going to my bedroom, I'm getting in my PJs, which just means derobing as much as I can, and I am laying down, and I'm getting in the bed under the covers, and I'm taking my nap.
You getting your full Peter Jacksons?
Yeah, I'm not going to be napping. Like just chilling on a couch.
Well, because the other pathology you've got is what if somebody sees you?
But in my house, I'm not worried about like my kids seeing me. But again, just it's feeding out of the same trough if I'm still on your couch.
That's what I got to believe, yeah.
Therapist. There is something to just the idea of being seen sleeping goes back to, I think, DP coming home being like, you weren't napping, were you? And I'm like, no.
No, Dad.
I definitely wasn't.
Me?
He's like, I can tell you were napping. And I'm like, I swear I wasn't. I swear it. Napping is for weak losers.
Mm.
You understand?
Yeah.
Wait, I thought you were a little British boy when you were younger.
Napping makes you weak. Napping is for wiping blood off my uniform. You don't get no blood on my uniform. Boy, you must be outside your mind. We're going to do up downs until Danny is no longer needing a nap.
or thirsty.
Now, I need a nap. I could take a nap every day. Now, it's a huge problem because that's right when the show starts. You know what I mean? Like, we're now like, here's the first topic. Let's take some calls. So it's a problem. I need coffee every day. So I drink coffee in the morning. I crash no matter what I do. And then the exercise people are like, exercise, you'll have more energy. I don't. It's a lie. It's a lie for regular people. Okay. The point of the dude's story is that I haven't gotten to yet is there's a coffee maker that we use here for on air folks. Cakes and Valdez in the morning. They need it more than I do, quite frankly. They make some extra coffee for themselves to get through their incredibly early morning shift.
Very early.
Right? Cakes took the coffee thermos, the carafe, if you will, not the draft, the carafe, home for cleaning. He forgot it today. The world is turned upside down.
Is it his machine?
No, it's like it's a communal thing, and he's doing a nice thing, so I'm not mad at him for it because he's like doing a nice because it needed to be cleaned, quite frankly. Me rinsing it out a little bit. You could do it. You're doing a so-so job here. Best you can in the work sink.
You need a dishwasher?
I don't think it's dishwasher safe, but you probably need a full, like, clean sponge, Dawn situation, a lot of scrubbing, leave it out, full
you
deal.
You cannot do that here.
Not to the same degree. It's okay. Like you could rinse it out a little bit. So there's no coffee thermos here, or whatever you want to call it, and it has been a show.
Well, you know what I noticed yesterday was, so a little behind the scenes here, Danny's bit is he doesn't like asking directly for Clary to go get him coffee. But about once or twice a week, he'll go like, Ryan, you planning on going and getting yourself any coffee? And Clary's like, no, I'm not going to. He's like, oh, never mind then. And Ryan's like, did you want me to get you coffee? And Danny's like, I mean, if you're getting yourself coffee.
If you're not on the way.
And Ryan's like, no, I'm just going to, like every day ever, not get myself coffee. Because I don't do that. And Danny's like, I mean, if you're going, just get me one.
My voice goes so high, by the way, when that happens.
Well, anyways, yesterday, you did that bit.
Yep.
And Clary passed off the coffee duty.
He shot it right down.
With the quickness to Toby on his first day hanging out with us on the Grant and Danny radio program. He just dismissed the duties right over to Toby. Corporate Clary's over your coffee nonsense.
Yeah, he was like, that doesn't sound like a corporate problem. That sounds like a local issue.
Yeah, that's more so of a local issue. And Toby was like, oh, I'll get some coffee. So I was like, Toby, would you like to go over to Compass Coffee? They know me my name over there at this point.
Now,
but
Toby, you're a nice boy, and I want you to know this. Don't give him an inch.
Well, and the beauty is I waddled over there in slides, in slushy weather, and short sleeves.
That is a lot.
Okay, I didn't know that.
But I just
no, I feel bad.
I just want you to know. He got
one for himself.
Did you get coffee for yourself?
He got coffee.
Were you happy about it?
You got a latte.
Yeah, I had a vanilla latte. It was very good.
As long as everyone's happy. I'm just telling you. You got to be careful.
Yeah, it's one of those things
if
where
you give it, he is not going to feel bad about taking a mile.
When you guys get married, you'll learn this. Like, if you demonstrate competence, it all of a sudden becomes your gig.
Right.
You know? So
might want to get him the wrong order. Like, he'll do the thing where he's never going to directly ask you to get him coffee.
Oh, man, I'm dragging. Like, anybody Toby, getting coffee today?
You look like you need coffee, Toby. Toby, did I just hear you yawn? You're like, no, dude, that wasn't a yawn. Like, I think you yawned. You should probably get some coffee. While you're there, the Beltway Blitz is next. We're giving away Caps tickets right here on Grant and Danny.